You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores. Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Accusations of first-degree intentional homicide, strangulation, mutilation, dismemberment, and necrophilia.
We bring you raw, unfiltered courtroom audio from the trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Frelick, the witness is yours.
Thank you, Your Honor. Based on
your review of the educational records for Taylor Shabusiness, did you make any conclusions about whether she had a budding personality disorder?
No, I did not. No.
Did you see in the records that she was a really disturbed teen?
Yes, that was my impression.
And did you indicate that you felt that it even went beyond that?
Yes. Which was later confirmed when we later received the Bellin inpatient records from when she was 12 and then again at 14 and was diagnosed with a thought disturbance, bipolar 1, depression severe with psychosis by age 14.
Did you have a chance to review a colleague's evaluation, Dr. Tracy Lucetta?
Yes.
Is she a PhD?
She is a PhD.
And she reviewed or examined Taylor Shabizis in the past, correct?
Yes.
So you had a chance to consider her report, correct?
Yes.
Did you also review Dr. Matthew Seipel's report?
Yes.
And he's a forensic psychologist from the Wisconsin Forensic Unit, correct?
Yes.
And then did you also have the opportunity to review Dr. Christina Engin's report?
Yes.
And these are reports that were conducted based off evaluations of Taylor Shabizis, correct?
Yes.
Before I ask you about whether you agree with their opinions or not, I'm going to ask you about what is your opinion as it relates to your evaluation and assessment of Taylor Shabizis?
My opinion is that she qualifies for the not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. My opinions are that she was not responsible because of a mental disease. She wasn't responsible for the criminal conduct because at the time of the event, she had the mental disease, and it both affected, she lacked substantial capacity to both appreciate the wrongfulness of her conduct at the time the homicide occurred, but also she could not conduct, she couldn't conform. She lacked volitional control. She couldn't conform her conduct to the requirements of law. She was lacking in her ability to control herself. The volitional control both was lacking. That's my opinion.
You said that she lacked the ability to control herself?
Yes, at the time of the event.
And do you opine that she has a mental disease or a mental defect or both?
Yes.
Both?
It's unclear. I tried to get her to be evaluated. I suggested she be evaluated, as Dr. Lucetta did too, further for possible brain issues. That didn't happen. But my impression was that she has a mental disease, which is the most likely bipolar disorder.
Based on your training and experience, can chemicals exacerbate?
They can, yes.
Did you draw any conclusions on whether Taylor Shabizis has any kind of chronic brain damage?
I couldn't, because that has to be done. For the first step is what we call neuropsychological testing by a neuropsychologist. Pretty elaborate testing. That's the process. And then if those test results are abnormal, then the next step would be a referral to a neurologist and medical doctor who would assess her and then decide whether or not there was enough information from the testing to explore the possibility of some brain defect, brain damage, maybe, yeah.
So. Okay. In your report, your opinions are on the last page, is that fair?
Yes.
And did you talk about her presentation when she presents herself? Do you have comments about that?
Yes, it's my comments about that are that it's very very unusual, what we call presentation. How is she looking? How does she talk? How does she interact? Everything. What's going on in her mind, whatnot. And it's really, really unusual. And I search my own 32-year memory bank here, and it's exceptionally unusual presentation, how she's coming across to me, the two attorneys, other evaluators in the school.
Would you agree that she has a strange presentation?
She does.
How about her facial expressions? Can you give some commentary on that from what you've seen?
Very unusual. They often, she's been described as smirky. Smirky. She has inappropriate, weird grinning when she's talking about the crimes. Looking, people have interpreted it to be like laughing at what she did. At times, in the jail, with evaluators, with me, at times, briefly, it's very strange. Other times, looking, I can mimic it, very scowly. A lot of people interpret it superficially to be grinning. Yeah, grinning at all, but getting a kick out of everything. Not me, Based on my experience and training, that's a psychotic person right there. That's what's causing this really weird, bizarre. And I'm telling you, to me, it's off the scale. 32 years, I've seen a lot of psychotic people, bipolar, psychotic, manic, and I just haven't seen very many like this. That is very exceptional, very exceptional.
Do you believe that she has a genuine mental disorder?
Yes.
Of a psychotic nature?
Yes.
What is the nature?
The best, my best opinion is the bipolar one, sometimes with psychosis, sometimes not. But that, after we got the Bellin records from two inpatient admissions at age 12 and 14, or 14 and 16, let me just double check. Yeah, 14 and 16, she was diagnosed at 14 with bipolar depression severe with psychosis. So that confirmed that's the most. I was thinking about schizophrenia, and sometimes schizophrenia and bipolar are very hard to distinguish. Sometimes not, but sometimes really hard to tell bipolar from schizophrenia. And there's a kind of a combined one called schizoaffective disorder, and that's been applied to her too. But I think based on this history we have from Bellin when she was diagnosed with bipolar, and then again at Nicolet when she was 22 years old, also bipolar, my opinion is, based on my experience and training, is bipolar 1. The more serious, there's bipolar 1, bipolar 2. But bipolar 1 can have psychosis, psychotic episode. So that's my opinion.
Are your opinions to a reasonable degree of professional certainty or psychological certainty?
Yes.
Both, correct?
Yes.
You did prepare a report on all of these findings, correct?
Yes.
Could I approach your honor?
That is my report, July 3rd, 2023.
Does that report contain all of your findings and evaluations based on Taylor Chavez's?
It's a brief summary, yes.
Okay. Everything in there is accurate, correct?
I hope so, yes, I think so.
Okay. And the report is dated July 3rd of 2023, correct?
Yes.
Offer Exhibit 6.
Any objection?
No.
Six is received.
Doctor, you did review Dr. Matthew Seipel's report, correct?
I did. Two reports.
Okay. You read through both of them?
Yes.
You're aware of the opinions and findings that he rendered, correct?
Yes.
Do you agree or disagree?
Disagree.
Tell me why.
Contrary to how Dr. Seipel, his opinion, which I respect all professionals' opinions. I don't criticize the professional. I can support my own opinion. But in contrast, I believe that she has, my opinion is that she has a genuine mental disorder.
And then Dr. Christina Engine, did you review her evaluation?
Yes.
And you agree or disagree with hers?
Disagree.
Tell me why.
Similar to Dr. Seipel, if I remember her report well enough, I disagree. My opinion is that Ms. Shabusiness has a genuine mental disorder of a psychotic nature.
Okay, I have no other questions. Thank you.
Cross-examination.
Good morning, Doctor.
Hi.
Sorry. A
little hidden here behind the court for us. I'll try to move over. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So you testified you're an independent forensic psychologist, is that right?
That's right.
And does that mean that you're just sort of a solo practitioner, you're not employed with a larger facility?
Right. I don't work for anybody. I work for myself.
And you've been retained by the defense in this case?
Yes.
All right. So is there a retainer agreement in place?
No. The very vast majority of my cases were for the public defender. Okay. So they have an appointment letter, how much they think they're going to pay, like that. Okay. No money up front until the case is done and they bill.
I understand.
Or he bills.
Sure. But you are being obviously compensated for your testimony.
No, I haven't been paid anything. No, I've been on this case, since 20? I don't get paid till the case is all done.
Okay, but at the end of the case you will.
Right.
Okay. You were asked questions about having previously conducted NGI evaluations in the past.
Right.
How many?
Hundreds? I don't know. Maybe, a lot. A lot.
All right. And how many in the last 10 years?
Many. And I have several right now. Several. Many.
Okay. So like dozens?
Oh, yes, at least. Yes.
And your CV, do you still have that in front of you? I believe it's Exhibit 1. You outlined some on page 2. Publications and presentations that you've completed, is that right?
Yes.
And for instance, in 2022, you had a publication or presentation on sexually violent persons.
Yes.
And similarly, in 2001, another publication on sexually violent persons.
Those were presentations, yes.
Okay. And would it be fair to say, I mean, looking through 2009 at least, all the publications and presentations we're seeing are with respect to sexually violent persons cases?
Most okay. are, yes.
And do you have publications or have you presented on the topic of conducting NGI evaluations?
No. Other than 2018, a colleague, a young colleague and I did a fill-in at the Wisconsin Psychological Association just on starting a forensic practice. And we talked about the different kinds of it. Like, it was to a group of psychologists who were thinking of getting to be a forensic psychologist, so we probably mentioned NGIs. Okay.
But that wasn't like a presentation on how to do NGI evaluations?
No.
Okay. I then want to ask about some of your sources of information, and counsel went through some of those with you. With respect to what occurred on February 22nd, 2022, what sort of information did you review?
The criminal complaint. You said what information did I review regarding that?
Yes.
Event?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because nobody was there. Parents were upstairs. So we don't have any direct witnesses. But I reviewed the police reports, all their interviews. That's basically it. What she told other evaluators and what she told me very briefly. So that was it.
So it was when you say police reports, you're referring to like the paper report that a detective or officer writes?
Right. There's the criminal complaint or information, which is a couple pages long, but then attached usually with it, usually are the basis for the criminal charges. And, you know, with the police, I guess in this case, the police who went there, arrested her, their interviews with her.
So did you just review the criminal complaint or also all of the police reports?
All the police reports.
Okay. So then it sounds like you didn't review the recorded interview itself of Misha Business.
Transcript. The recorded interview herself and the at least an hour and a half, 2 hours of the video interview.
Did you review the recorded interview of Misha Business from February 23rd of 2022?
What I was given by the attorney was a transcript of their interviews, and so a transcript, written type.
Okay.
The transcript.
Was it like the police report summarizing it?
If I remember right, it was a transcript of the, you know, I don't know if they had a court reporter in there. I don't know how they do that.
But not the actual visual image itself. You didn't.
I only saw about an hour and a half, 2 hours of the visual, whatever you call that, video in those conference rooms where the police detectives were interviewing Misha Business.
Okay, so you reviewed an hour and a half of that. Was that the February 23rd interview?
Yes, I believe so.
And so you didn't review the rest of the approximate 5.5 hours of that interview?
No, it didn't transmit to me by computer for some reason. Okay. So it was only roughly an hour and a half, 2 hours of what I did see.
The defense didn't provide the whole interview for you?
They tried, but for whatever reason, I don't know, technology between the DAs or what, that's happened before, not uncommon.
Sure. Well, to be clear, we aren't providing you any information to review, right?
What? Pardon?
The state isn't providing you any information to review, right? You're getting that information from other people.
Well, I think it goes from you all to him.
Sure.
Yeah, right, and then to me. Yeah.
So then it also sounds like, Doctor, you haven't reviewed the February 28th interview of Misha Business?
I read the police descriptions of it, and I thought I had a transcript. You know, I think it was a summary, pretty decent summary of the February 28th. Similar, the summary, pretty decent detailed of the February 23, the two interviews they did on that day.
Okay. But not, again, the actual, visual image, the recorded interview itself.
Not from that one again. If it was sent to me, I couldn't
okay.
see it.
And you mentioned that obviously one of your sources of information is from your meeting or meetings with Misha Business?
Yes.
All right. And the the February 7th, 2023 interview, that was the instance where Misha Business threw a chair at you, right?
Yes.
And after she did that, you said she just sat down.
Yeah.
And was calm after that point?
Very. And I looked at her, as I'm subject to doing, I used that time before the guards came in. Maybe it took a while, 3 minutes or so. And it was weird, bizarre, whatever you want to call it, because she immediately, very calmly, came back, sat down across from me, and I looked at her physiological responses, just totally blank. And again, I've seen violent patients. I got attacked once and beat up at Mendota, got slapped. But I saw very many aggressions on the unit I was on at Mendota for the 14 most aggressive patients, males, in the whole state. And we'd have between 3 to 7 aggressions. And usually after a person does something like that, they have a red face, angry, yelling, swearing, breathing heavily, nothing.
So, those prior instances you talked about, those were with people who were at Mendota, you said?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So those were people who were actually found to have a mental illness.
No, not all of them. We were the overflow unit. We mostly had our patients were from around the state, jails, prisons, Winnebago Mental Health, they were either, most of them were, had been found not guilty, you know, legally insane, but we were the overflow unit for the admission unit for competency evaluation. So they were not all necessarily mentally ill, but most were with a psychotic illness.
And those were the people who kind of, you made a gesture, like a red face,
yeah,
things like
but
that after.
I've dealt with many aggressive people in the outpatient setting too. And yeah, it was unusual. I just don't, you know, searching my memory banks, had a hard time coming up with somebody. You know, I've seen it before, but it's unusual for a person to not be aroused, you know, when they're feeling so angry. It was unusual.
And then I want to ask about the June 19th, 2023 interview with Ms. Shabusiness. And that was at the a conference room area?
Yes.
And her attorney was present for that, right?
Yes.
And is it common for you to have those sort of evaluations with an interested party in the room?
I always ask attorneys, going back to when I was at Mendota, I learned this at Mendota, I always ask attorneys, if they have the time, to sit in at least during the initial part, like for competency evaluation, so I can see the attorney and the client interacting. And so I can, it gives me more information about whether the defendant is understanding what's going on, if they're able to work with their attorney. So I always ask attorneys to do that. You know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't have time, whatever. It was unusual, though, in this case, that Mr. The defense attorney sat in through the whole thing. I did it for a particular reason, though.
Okay. And then you talked about exhibit number 4. Do you still have that in front of you, Doctor? It's the chart you prepared.
Oh, sure. Yeah, right.
Okay. There's a number of exhibits here. So you kind of listed the age of Ms. Shabusiness at the time of various admissions. Is that right?
Right, approximate age.
So it looks like ages 14, there was a Bellin Health Psychiatric Center.
Yes.
Age 16 from Bellin Health Psychiatric.
Yes.
And then there was nothing that was reviewed until Ms. Shabusiness was 23.
Right.
So you reviewed no mental health history, and you're aware of no mental health history from ages 16 through 23.
Well, 2020, she was in the jail, or no, I guess that was 2020, when she was 22. So, okay. Yeah, no, there's a gap. Okay. Yeah.
So there wasn't anything, I guess, from 16 to 22 then?
Not that I know of.
And when you were kind of summarizing the chart in Exhibit 4, I noticed a few times that when you're describing hallucinations, there was also sometimes then concurrently reports of methamphetamine use. Is that fair?
Yes.
And in your experience, methamphetamine can produce psychosis as a side effect.
Yes, it can in some cases.
And that was actually reported in quite a few of these records, wasn't it?
It was.
All right. So then I want to ask about the Bellin stay in 2012. You reviewed those records, right?
Yes.
Okay, and in particular, did you review the discharge summary?
Yes.
And I guess the discharge summary, that's kind of like the exit interview, so to speak, right?
Exactly.
All right. So you would recognize that if you were to see it?
Maybe. But I have it on the chart. I believe at the discharge, she was diagnosed with mood disorder, not otherwise specified, without psychosis by the 3 days.
And that's exactly right, Doctor. So I'm going to show you Exhibit 7. Does that appear to be the discharge summary we're talking about?
Yes.
And in discharge diagnoses, you mentioned a mood disorder without psychosis.
Yes.
Nowhere in the discharge diagnosis is there a bipolar diagnosis, is there?
Yes, that's true.
And in fact, if you could flip to the last page of that, it says page 118 on the bottom, but it's the last page of that stapled packet, Doctor. You see the portion that says condition on discharge?
Yes.
Okay, and it says, quote, on exam, Taylor denied hallucinations or thoughts of harm toward herself or others, a wish to be dead, or that she would be better off dead. Did I state that accurately?
Yes.
And that was the Bellin health records from 2012?
Yes.
I then want to ask about the Bellin health records from 2014. You reviewed those as well?
Yes.
And there was a portion that contained the discharge notes as well. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. Okay, I'm going to show you Exhibit 8, Doctor. Do you recognize that?
Yes.
Does that appear to be some of the discharge notes from October 29th of 2014?
This was difficult because you see at the top and all through here, pretty weird, because it's got every page at the top says 10/28/2014, admission, and then parentheses, discharged from assess at Bellin. So it's confusing. It was one of the more confusing medical. I've been reviewing medical records since I was age 14 as a candy striper, and this was hard. So it's difficult to figure out, is this the final discharge? And I think I finally concluded, and she was only there for 3 days, so I think it's the discharge, but okay. It's the discharge summary, but it is confusing. You have to look at all the dates and everything, but this was really confusing.
Sure. But if you could, Doctor, flip to the last page of that exhibit, do you see the area where it lists the diagnosis for Misha Business? And there's two diagnoses, aren't there?
Right.
One of which is cannabis abuse, comma, continuous.
Right.
The other is alcohol abuse, comma, episodic.
Yes.
Okay, there's not a bipolar diagnosis listed there, is there?
No, there's not.
There's not that prior mood disorder that we heard about in 2012, is there?
Somewhere in these pages, I believe,
And I'm sorry, Doctor, if the question is clear. In the diagnosis part, neither of those diagnoses are listed, are they?
Exactly. No bipolar, and what else was the other thing you said? Mood disorder.
The mood disorder.
Yes, you're right.
And that was the Bellin from 2012, right?
Yes, age 16.
I then want to ask about these records from Nicolet Psychiatric, and that's sort of the county admission, right, to locked facility?
Yes.
Okay. And actually, the St. Mary's hospital visit you testified to on direct, that was like the day before the admission to the Nicolet Center, right?
I think it was the day of. Okay. I think that it looks like, because it's March 22nd, 2021, I think they St. Mary's ER discharged her right to Nicolet.
Right.
That's, I think, that's how that went down.
Okay. So when Ms. Shea Business was admitted into Nicolet, she had a drug screen done, did she not?
Yes.
And that drug screen was positive for controlled substance, was it not?
I believe so. I don't have it written down here, but I was substance use, yes. And then by then, my memory is that it was meth, I think, meth, probably THC, marijuana.
Thank you. Doctor. You had reviewed those records from Nicolet Psychiatric, right?
Yes.
And those helped you reach your conclusion?
Yes.
All right. So I'm going to show you Exhibit 9. Now, I didn't mean to test your memory. I know you reviewed a lot of records. So does that appear to be the notes from Mission Business's admission into Nicolet Psychiatric?
Yes.
And that's dated March 22nd of 2021.
Did you say 27? It's 23rd.
No. You're correct. The admission date is March 22nd.
Yes.
Okay, and the date of service that's listed here is March 23rd.
Right.
And then in the history of present illness, it states in the second line, she has been using methamphetamine. She would not tell me how often and how much she has been using it, but drug screen was positive for methamphetamine, amphetamine, and THC. Did I state that accurately?
Yes.
All right. And then Nicolet Psychiatric, that's a sort of locked facility, right?
That's my understanding is it is. I don't think I've ever been there, but my understanding is it's probably locked, I would guess.
Is it a facility that's sort of closely monitored?
Yes. I think they do. I think I did read that they lock their units, I believe.
I guess the purpose of all that staff presumably is to watch after patients.
Well, right, because she was there on a mental health commitment, so she either had to have been dangerous to herself or to somebody else, and those are usually locked units.
So presumably, you know, people who are in that facility aren't, you know, using controlled substances anymore?
Usually.
Usually. So then I'm going to show you exhibit number 10. Does that appear to be the discharge notes from Nicolet Psychiatric?
Yes, this one we know because it says final summary on the top.
And that date is April 12th of 2021.
Yes.
And there still is for the discharge diagnosis, as you mentioned, a bipolar diagnosis, right?
Yes.
Can you flip to the second page? On condition on discharge, it states the patient has a bright affect. Is that right?
Yes.
That she is forward-looking.
Yes.
That she showed some motivation regarding remaining clean and sober.
Yes.
That she denies any delusional beliefs.
Yes.
That it notes there's still some degree of paranoia is present, but denies any thoughts of self-harm.
Yes.
And that was after being in that facility for that time.
And she was just started on, she was on oral antipsychotic, but she just was started on the injected medicine, the longer-acting injected antipsychotic, it's called atypical antipsychotic medication, which then she didn't stay on. After the six-month order to treat, she...
But also on April 12th, she presumably would have been free from methamphetamine, amphetamine, and THC.
From the... So 21 days, you know, usually in general, it would have been out of her system, but it could be still possibly affecting her thought processes. That's just, you just don't know because the testing wasn't done.
Sure.
But no, she still had some paranoia. It says some degree of paranoia was still there. However, she wasn't no delusional beliefs, so she wasn't super psychotic. Wasn't psychotic.
And actually, I glossed over two discharge diagnoses. One was the bipolar, right?
Yes.
Well, there was a second one, wasn't there?
Yes, substance use disorder, i.e., in other words, THC, marijuana, and methamphetamine.
Thank you. You talked then about some of these hallucinations that are scattered throughout the records you reviewed, right?
Yes.
And some of those are things that the defendant is endorsing. Isn't that fair?
Yes.
And what does endorsing mean?
She's saying self-report. She's reporting them herself. She's describing some of them herself. Not a lot over her history. Are you talking about the hallucinations?
Just the concept of what endorsing means.
And yeah,
that's reported by a person.
Do you have a headache? And if you say yes, that you're endorsing the headache.
Thank you. And actually, while we're still on the topic of the bipolar diagnosis at Nicolet Psychiatric, you mentioned that you reviewed a report authored by Dr. Lucetta. Is that right?
Yes.
And Dr. Lucetta was a expert retained by the defense earlier in the case.
Yes.
And she prepared a report that you reviewed.
Yes.
And part of that report, Dr. Lucetta spoke with Ms. Shabusiness.
Yes.
And do you recall a portion where they were discussing that bipolar diagnosis?
I don't remember that exactly.
Would it assist to review Ms.
Sure.
Dr. Lucetta's report?
Show you what's been marked as exhibit number 11. Does that appear to be consistent with Dr. Lucetta's report?
I believe so.
Did you review that report?
Yes.
Doctor, if you could turn to page 3 of that report.
In the second paragraph, I guess it's the first full paragraph. Sort of the last sentence of that. And it says, quote, she, and that refers to Ms. Shabusiness, questioned the bipolar diagnosis, hypothesizing that her symptoms were attributable to methamphetamine abuse, explaining that prior to admission, she had been administering the drug intravenously up to 9 times per day for 5 to 8 months prior to her admission. Did I read that right?
Yes.
And that's referencing the Nicolet records that we just talked about, right?
Yes.
And that's where the bipolar diagnosis came from.
Just a second here. She seems to be, beginning it says, Ms. Shabusiness reported that she was previously admitted, blah, 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 blah. And it seems like that's what she's telling to Dr. Lucetta. But then at the point where you're, that last sentence, she questioned the bipolar. That's, you know, I had difficulty. I remember reading this, and I couldn't quite figure it out. I think you're right that when she's questioning, she questioned the bipolar diagnosis, attributing it maybe to methamphetamine abuse. I think Dr. Lucetta is taking that Ms. Shabusiness, that's what she told Nicolet, the psychiatric staff there, I think.
That your interpretation is that sentence refers to what Ms. Shabusiness told Nicolet?
Well, Ms. Shabusiness told Dr. Lucetta at the beginning of the paragraph that she was admitted to Nicolet. Okay, so that's her self-report. She was vague about why admitted, bipolar. She was diagnosed with bipolar. She was discharged. She discontinued the medication. She doesn't like to take medication. She questioned the bipolar diagnosis. So I'm not sure if that reflects when she was at Nicolet or what she's telling Dr. Lucetta. I'll go, and you think it was Dr. Lucetta, so that's okay, because she's done that. Sometimes she will say, this is Ms. Shabusiness, yeah, I've been diagnosed with bipolar. Other times she will say, I don't think I've got it. I don't like taking medications. It varies. It does vary. So let's just agree that this is what she's telling Dr. Lucetta, but it's a little crazy there.
And I guess the point, Doctor, in any event, the sentence I read, those were the statements of Ms. Shabusiness regarding the bipolar diagnosis.
Right, regardless if she's telling Dr. Lucetta or the treaters at Nicolet. She questioned it. Not unusual.
Sure. I then, Doctor, would like to talk a little bit more about bipolar 1. What is the diagnostic criteria for bipolar 1?
When a person has, by definition, they have to have had at least one what's called a manic episode, which is extremely elevated mood, and it can be with psychosis, thought disorder or not, but they have to be have at least one prior or current manic episode. It by two things, it's either you go from depression, really bad depression with bipolar one, super duper suicidal type, real depression, and then they have to have in their history at least one of these real super duper elevated moods. And it's bizarre when you see it. It's pretty bizarre. Yeah, so that's basically it.
So you need at least one manic episode.
Yes, I believe that's in the diagnosis.
And in order to diagnose a manic episode, there are four criteria, aren't there?
You know, we look at the mood, a very elevated, exceptionally elevated mood. And then some other, usually there's these other behaviors that go along with it. Again, it can be, the person can be psychotic, not necessarily, but they can be psychotic in this very elevated mood. And then they usually are some other behaviors. They can stay up for 3-4 days. They wildly spend, sometimes gamble away, hypersexual. Energy, feeling super energetic.
So there are four criteria, right?
Yeah, I don't have my DSM book in front of me, but...
So the DSM-5 that you referenced, what is that?
That's the American Psychiatric, MD's, Psychiatric Association Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, the 5th edition. Oh, I think out in about 2015, I think it was, put out, and it's used in this country for mental health diagnoses and billing.
You would agree it's a pretty commonly used and widely accepted
source. In the United States, yes.
So for a bipolar 1 diagnosis, the first criteria is that there is a distinct period of abnormally and persistently elevated behavior. Is that fair?
Yes.
And that period has to last, quote, at least 1 week. And present most of the day, nearly every day. Does that sound right?
Yes.
So it's not just a manic episode that, you know, is an hour, right? It's a long period of time that somebody's manic.
Right.
In a heightened state. Is that
fair?
Yes,
yes.
And then the second criteria is some of those, you know, symptoms, mood disturbances, you mentioned gambling, things like that are exhibited?
Yes.
And that mood disturbance, the third criteria, also has to cause an impairment of some kind, right?
A what?
An impairment of some kind?
Yes, an impairment, yes.
And then the fourth criteria for a bipolar 1 diagnosis is that the manic episode is not attributable to the physiological effects of a substance.
Yes.
I.e. a drug.
Yes.
Such as methamphetamine.
Exactly.
So,
or LSD.
Sure.
Something.
So if you're observing a manic episode, but... you have information that there was recent methamphetamine use, that would be a concern for a bipolar 1 diagnosis.
Yes, without further information or more observations.
Doctor, I then want to ask some questions about your report. I believe it's Exhibit 6. Is that still in front of you?
Yes.
Okay. Is that Exhibit 6?
Yes, that's the most recent
exhibit. So your report and your opinions that you're testifying to today regarding NGI rely in part based on your observations of Ms. Chavez on June 19th, right?
Correct, yes.
And actually, as a result of that interview, based on your observations, you had a concern about her present competency in that moment, didn't you?
Yes.
And in fact, your report that you're referencing in Exhibit 6 is sort of a combination NGI report and competency.
Yes, that's what I was asked to do.
And those legally are different concepts, right?
They are.
Competency is sort of in the moment.
Yes.
And NGI obviously refers to the date of the offense.
Exactly, the time of the offense.
Okay, so during your interview with Ms. Shipbusiness, you had a concern about her competency.
Yes.
Objection, relevance. Move to strike.
Overruled. yet you're using her statements to form your NGI opinion.
Her statements, my observations, but not just that two-hour interview. It was the entire information I had about the case. But yes, you're right. During the interview, it helped me to form my opinions because I submitted a mini report months before that where I couldn't make an opinion because I hadn't been able to interview her. That was, well, both competency and NGI.
Thank you. So then I want to ask about malingering. What does that mean to you?
Malingering is intentional faking of symptoms. Could be about anything, any symptoms, but in the psychiatric profession, malingering is intentional faking of mental health system. You know.
Is that sort of a synonym for feigning or something like that?
Yeah, that's a fancy. Yeah, malingering, feigning, yeah, faking. I simplify it, faking.
Sure.
Intentional faking.
And you would agree that's been a concern for evaluators who have met with Ms. Shabusiness.
Yes.
Dr. Seipel had that concern, did he not?
I think he concluded, if my memory's right, I think he concluded that's it, yes.
I think you're right. Dr. Seipel concluded she was faking, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
And it was a concern raised by Dr. Lucetta, was it not?
Yes, definitely.
And again, she was an expert retained by the defendant.
Yes.
And that she suggested these potential for feigning should be explored further.
Exactly.
And in fact...
Inpatient.
And in fact, in your field, there are tools that can be used to help determine if somebody is accurately providing you information, right?
Yes.
One of those is the MMPI.
Yes.
And those, have you used those before?
Oh, yeah.
And they're helpful for you to know if a patient is providing you accurate information.
But.
I'm sorry.
Yes, but you have to take that. It's one part of the clinical evaluation, but you got to evaluate it with other information to decide if it's an accurate test result.
Sure. But you need that information to then know if it's accurate, right?
You need what information?
You need to perform the test.
You don't have to perform. I don't have to perform psychological fancy 500, 300. I don't have to do that. That's not a requirement. Psychiatrists don't do psychological testing. So sometimes I might do it, but I've done many evaluations without that when I have enough other information. You're not required. There's nothing that says you're a psychologist, you got to do MMPI. No, you don't have to do that. I've done it many times.
And doctor, I wasn't suggesting that. What I was suggesting is you mentioned that you need to take that test into account and see if it's accurate, essentially, right?
If you've done the test, yes. Sure. Or if somebody else, like in this case, it had been done by all these other people, so I consider that information. And that they found that, yes, she had, you know, the other thing, she had over-presented, we call it the test, can detect. When you're over-presenting a symptom, like, oh, my God, I really got a bad headache, really super, you know, like that, you over-present it. It basically, again, it could be faking. But it's just an exaggeration. That's another term we use.
Sure. So, but in your report, again, Exhibit 6, I think you quote, psychological testing by other evaluators found signs of possible malingering or intentional faking of mental disorder symptoms. Is that a fair summary of what you wrote in your report?
Yes.
All right. And at the end of your report, it says, quote, testing can reveal attempts to fake a mental disorder, end quote. Did I quote that accurately? It's on page 9 of your report, doctor. Last sentence.
Right, yes.
And so what attempts did you make to use some of those tests to determine if Ms. Shabusiness was faking?
Yeah, good question. I looked at the other psychologist's test results. Plus another evaluator done when about concerning her baby, Child Protective Services. I think he did testing too. So I look at those results yes, they showed exactly what you're saying. But then I take that in the context of the rest of the evaluation and my experience and training.
So, Doctor, you did not conduct any of those tests with Mr. Business on June 19th?
Yes. Or is that no? Which way do I answer that one? I did not conduct any of those tests, right, on whenever I did.
Even though those tests can be helpful to determine if a patient is providing you accurate information?
Yes.
And you didn't utilize any of those tests in this case?
No.
Ask an answered objection.
Thank you, Doctor. I have nothing further.
Redirect.
It's going to be a bit, Your Honor. Do you want to take a break or should I ask some questions?
No.
Okay. with regards to your report and evaluation of my client, did you get a sense that she was feigning or faking?
At times with me, or not with me, during our interview, I didn't think that was, or my interview, I didn't think that was faking at all. Okay. No, but with other evaluators, and again, the test results, it's my based on my education, my training in this field, my impression was that if there was any, I don't think there was intentional faking, period. I think we're dealing with my opinion is we're dealing with a genuine mentally ill person who occasionally is treated, takes medications. I don't think she's intentionally faking symptoms, even in the test results. The test results show that she was exaggerating symptoms of a mental illness. However, Dr. Tracy Lucetta, in her report, I believe it's in her writing report, she points out that the majority of people with those feigning, malingering test results, they're later found out not to have been intentionally faking.
When, in your experience, in your training, do people sometimes who are going through a psychological evaluation or some kind of an assessment tend to overpresent? They want to put themselves in a good light?
Sometimes. I've done those tests, yeah. And every forensic evaluation, I assess a person for malingering. Everyone, I do. I don't necessarily give all the tests. Occasionally I do, but we have even other tests for just faking. And I sometimes use that. But, yeah, sometimes people do that for various reasons.
With regards to Dr. Lucetta, you read the whole report, correct?
Yes.
And she had recommended transfer to one of the state psychiatric facilities like Mendota Mental Health or Winnebago, correct?
Right, for testing, neuropsychological testing and medications, and yes.
And before you wrote your July 3rd, 2023 report, you did consider all of the information, the interview on June 19th, the interviews in February, is that true?
Yes.
And all the records, correct?
Yes.
And you're indicating to the court that you did review some of the video clipped information between Ms. Chibizis and the detectives?
Yes.
So you considered all of that information, correct?
Yes.
Your opinions aren't just based off of what happened on June 19th, correct?
No.
And as it relates to the DSM-5 manual, the diagnostic statistical manual that psychologists use, you're familiar with the elements for bipolar 1?
Yes.
And did Taylor Chibizis exhibit some of those elements based on what you saw?
Yes. And she confirmed she had had those experiences in the past, too.
And oftentimes when psychologists do testing, they would do the MMPI, the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory, correct?
Yes.
It's a series of questions, correct?
The short version is 300.
And then you gotta answer these questions, and then you gather information from that, fair?
Yeah, it's put into a, nowadays it's put into a computer, and yeah.
It's a computer test, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't have the computer version. I don't know if it's all, I don't know how that works.
Let me ask you this. With the other test, the other gold standard test for psychologists is the MCMI, correct?
Yeah.
The Milan Clinical Multi-Axial Inventory Test?
Yes.
Is that another written test?
It is.
Okay. Was it your understanding that Dr. Matthew Seipel did not use the MMPI or the MCMI?
No, he didn't use them.
Other psychologists had already done that, correct?
Right.
And you reviewed those reports, correct?
Yes.
So you went right to it and got the materials and analyzed things from a psychological standpoint, correct?
Right. I didn't think there was any utility, any use to giving her the whole test again when she had had it, I don't know, 3-4 times?
Wasn't necessary, is that fair?
I didn't think so, no.
In some of these records from Bellin, did you see that she was huffing nail polish in 2013?
Yeah.
Jack, this is outside the scope of cross.
It's in the exhibit. It's in Exhibit 8. I can grab the exhibit, Your Honor. That's true, right? She was she admitted to huffing nail polish in 2013.
About then, yes.
Your Honor, could I have Exhibit 7, 8, 9, 10? With regards to Bellin Psychiatric Center, her discharge summary, it does indicate Axis 1 that she had a mood disorder, correct?
I believe so, yes. Was that from the 2012?
Yes.
Yes.
And that it, at least at that time, it did talk about hallucinations, correct?
Yes, and when she came in,
Doctor,
they...
if you just focus
yes.
On his question, he asked if it referenced it, okay?
Yes.
It did, okay. And Exhibit 9 here, the Nicolet Psychiatric Center Inpatient Mental Health Unit. The initial evaluation did indicate on the bottom diagnosis was bipolar disorder, correct?
Yes.
And on the Exhibit 10, fair to say that the final summary for Nicolet Psychiatric Center for Taylor Shabizis. She was admitted 3/22 of 2021, admitted with a diagnosis of bipolar disorder, correct? That was one of them?
Yes.
And then she was discharged April 12th of 2021, again with bipolar disorder as one of the discharge diagnoses, correct?
Yes.
And that on admission, that her thought content showed that she appeared to be having auditory hallucinations and delusions of persecution, correct?
Yes.
And suicidal ideation?
I believe so, yes. Oh, yes.
And is it fair to say that based on what you understood that Ms. Chavezas did not take her medications after she was released from Nicolet Psychiatric Center in April of 2021?
Yes, she did. That's my understanding.
And that, at least according to that document, her affect was flat?
Yes.
What does that mean, her affect was flat?
Oh, sorry, I'm going to get a little cough drop here. That means that, I mean, facial expression is just emotionless, flat emotions.
As it relates to these other exhibits, Exhibit 9, she was prescribed Abilify for mood stabilization. Is that correct?
Yes. And what was that one from? Is it
The date of service, it indicates 3/23 of 21.
So that was Nicolet?
Yes.
Yeah, she was prescribed, yes. Prescribed. First she was on Abilify, I think when she came in, and then they switched her to the longer acting injected medicine just to make it easier. But then she didn't like it because it hurt. The injection hurt.
And at least at Nicolet, she was brought in on an EM1 petition because she was hearing voices, correct?
Yes.
And she was seeing people who were not there, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, no other questions. Thank you.
Mr. Saunders, any
just very briefly, the question about having a flat affect, about the reported hallucinations, about being brought in Chapter 51, that was upon admission into Nicolet, right?
Yes.
When she was testing positive for methamphetamine and other substances.
Right, substance use.
Thank you, Doc.
Anything on those topics?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Your excuse.
I think I did forget to move 7, 8, 9, and 10.
Any objection to 7, 8, 9, and 10?
No objection.
Those will be received.
Thank you.
Your Honor, can I just make sure? A lot of things are going on in my head. Were all of my exhibits offered and accepted?
Yes.
Okay. Exhibit 5, if it's not, I'll offer it.
Any objection to 5? Mr. Saunders?
No.
Thank you, Judge.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take our lunch break now. It is 5 after 12. I'm going to ask that you be back in the jury room no later than 1:15. I'd like to get underway right at that time. All rise for the jury.
I'm going to talk to my client, Your Honor, about whether I'm going to have her testify, but other than that, no.
Sure.
I may not have her testify. I have to talk to her.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and that's something I wanted to cover because in my research, they tell judges that we don't necessarily have to make inquiry of a defendant at this phase, but it's best practice to do so, and far be it for me to try to avoid best practice. So I think I would undertake that qualification or that the colloquy with your client when we return and when you advise me whether you have other witnesses. If you're indicating after lunch that she would be your only witness and you don't intend to call her, then I'd have that colloquy before we bring the jury back in.
Okay,
just so everybody knows that.
Thank you.
Then the other thing I want the parties to take a look at, I'm going to provide you after the lunch break, is the proposed jury instructions, and I want you to give some thought to how you want that laid out. My suggestion is that, and I'm open-minded on this, so I just want you to think about it, and you can certainly push back a little bit if you want, that I would give the at the conclusion of evidence, I would give the instruction 160 regarding closings. Then I would have you close. Then I would give a modified version of 100. That's the preliminary instruction indicating to the jurors that I'll instruct them upon the principles of the law, that they shouldn't use any impression that they may have of my thoughts in any way, and that they're to follow the instructions that I give them. So I propose to give a modified 100. I'll modify it over the lunch hour, give it to you. You can take a look at it, and your response might be, I don't want you to give that at all, or I want you to modify it differently, but that I would give 100. I might give 315, Mr. Frelick. That is the instruction that if your client chooses not to testify, I could certainly give that instruction again. Although this is a civil matter, and I'm not sure that it's really necessary, but that is a possibility. Then I would give 640, which is mental disease or defect expert opinion testimony, and 605, which is the instruction, the base instruction on this proceeding, and then the jury would go into deliberations. That's what I would propose. I'll give you my draft of those instructions after lunch. You can think about it, and we can have further conversation then. Anything else before we break, Mr. Saunders?
No.
Mr. Frelick?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Then I'd ask you to be back in about an hour. That'll be 1:05. The jury will be back at 1:15. We can take up anything then. All right, we're in recess.
Thank you.
You're listening to True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast continuous coverage of the trial of Taylor Shabusiness, Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage.
More raw trial audio next.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product, fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com. Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.